This week on Barbell Shrugged, we discuss the strength program 531 written by Jim Windler.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Play today.
That's all I needed to hear.
Oh, I'm done. I'm out of breath. All right, go. Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm here.
Congratulations.
I'm Mike Bledsoe. I'm here with Doug Larson. I'm mixing my words up again. Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
I'm also
CTP
here.
CTP behind the...
We're both here.
He's here as well.
Is this recording?
I don't know. Chris doesn't know.
I never could tell.
Are we recording? All right, today we're going to be talking about 531 because we get a lot of questions about it and a lot of CrossFitters do it. 531 is a strength program developed by Jim Windler. Basic barbell movements, mm-hmm. squat, press, bench press, rows.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those deadlifts.
Deadlifts. I know you were leaving out something. All the main core strength exercises that will be familiar to any... person.
Most people want to get stronger at presses, bench presses, deadlifts, and squats. That's why so many people find this program attractive. And that is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to break it down a bit and explain why it's good and how you could implement it in your CrossFit training. But first, make sure to go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, so that way you can learn the 8 snatch mistakes you might be making that are keeping you from becoming a world champion weightlifter. So,
really?
A lot of things keeping you from becoming a world champion weightlifter.
Well, you'll learn
the
8
top
of them.
Eight.
These After 8. That, there's probably about 50 more things that you're doing wrong, but we won't cover those in the video because it would get exhausting.
It would.
I'm waiting.
Quick, Doug, say something. I ran out of shit to say.
he's out of movements.
I'm out of breath.
You're panting like a dog.
Too much 531, not enough CrossFit.
So, Chris Moore, I'll direct it to you. Since you're the powerlifting guru and you actually know Jim. In fact, in the book, if I'm not mistaken, you're in the background of some of the photos.
Yeah. If you Google Jim Windler 1,000-pound squat or Jim Windler squat, you'll see a picture of Jim at the... I remember it was in Zanesville, Ohio, 2004, 3, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. We were at the same meet. And if you see Jim taking his 1,000-pound lift, which was successful, and it was a great lift, after which this meet he retired, he had a good run in powerlifting. But behind, over his, was it left shoulder, right? You'll see a very chubby guy, swollen-faced, getting ready to take his attempt. And that person
I just pulled it up.
That person is me.
Yeah, if you go to jimwindler.com, it's one of the pictures that are... in the thing. You got you in the background. It's probably better than what Doug has.
That's me at my...
just up and to the right of the spotter.
Oh, yeah.
That's so right. I weighed about 360 pounds in that picture.
So that gives... that anyone who is wondering about Chris's credibility, that picture of him in the background, that proves that Chris knows what he's talking about.
I was there. No, I mean, I had all right. I think I squatted like 950 at that meet. Or 900, somewhere in there.
Let's see. So actually, if you don't know anything about Jim Windler, since we pulled this picture up, it actually has Jim's stats right next to it. And he wrote this article. So he's a 275-pound lifter, 1,000-pound squat, 275 bench press, and a 700-pound deadlift for a 2375 total, which
you
is
say 675
super
impressive. 675?
He
said like 275.
Maybe I did. 675, which is way better than 275.
We know how bros are, man. I don't offend anybody on the bench record. We're not going to go there. We're not going to offend. But yeah, Jim was excellent. And before he was in powerlifting, like if you ever watch Jim, like go to his YouTube page, go to see his powerlifting reels and stuff on YouTube just to investigate as you learn about his programming because it gives you some idea of his background. But Jim is really like one of the more explosive squatters I ever saw. Like he would just lower, like in warm ups up to like 500 pounds, he's lower. He's just going boom, with just like a slingshot. Before he powerlifted, he had I think he had been to the Air Force Academy, played some football in college at I think it was University of Arizona. So he's got a really well developed, extended, like in high school, obviously being a high level football player. So he's got a lot of explosive athletic background and a huge sort of baseline of strength that he went into powerlifting with. But yeah, watch his lifts. He was a really good lifter, man.
Am I getting this right too? Did he kind of develop this as he was getting out of competitive powerlifting?
Yeah, I think
he was kind of like getting away from you know, going nuts and just trying to be healthy and strong. And this was like his way to be healthy and strong.
Jim talks about it. We hopefully we can have him on the show. Like we were talking about before to tell his full story, because I think it'd be fascinating. I think we all love to drink whiskey and lift heavy barbells in his garage. Why not? But yeah, I think, you know, if you're in powerlifting for long enough, either keep with it until you, you know, despite your records going down and your health, you're going to keep fighting for max efforts, or you realize that I'm a little too heavy and I want to do other things with my time. I want to train in other styles. I want to be a little lighter. You know, like he went through a big weight cutting phase and went back mostly, I guess, to the idea that probably a more balanced strength program for general strength is obviously better. So bringing the squat stance in and go lower, probably, you know, probably more of a high bar position, less gear, obviously, more reps in a deadlift, submax programming, an emphasis, biggest emphasis on the shoulder press, standing shoulder press, which, you know, most people who are familiar with training, popular training programs, especially powerlifting, that's really non-existent now.
And that's something you actually neglected for a long time.
For years.
And then when you try to throw it back in, originally, I remember it was excruciating.
Yeah, I mean, because I could only do like 185 pounds for two or three reps.
Because I'm a guy who can and I was could benching, bench 700.
Yeah, I was benching like my best raw press outside of powerlifting conditions was like 550 pounds, and I couldn't military press 205 because my mechanics were so bad. So you're going in an extreme direction because that's what you should do for powerlifting. But in terms of being prepared for general strength and general life function, it's really not ideal at all.
And you did find also that when you're overhead press improved, you saw improvements on your bench press.
Yeah, so three things I think helped a lot. Like pressing balanced out my shoulder health a little bit. It allowed me to get strong without pushing the bench as much, especially the incline press. If you have sore shoulders, you need to improve your standing press, do incline press.
I want to bring this up. One of the reasons, because we have a 6-month muscle gain challenge, and that's a program we run, and I have the guys benching like once a month, and the rest of it's overhead work because the focus really is Olympic lifts, but we still bench like once a month. And some people feel like it's not very much.
It's just out of balance with everybody's program. You do it too much. It's like anything. It deserves a place, and that place should be relatively minor because it's just not a very, it shouldn't be abused. But I'd say two things that helped me more than anything in my life, training wise. One is getting back to shoulder presses and getting better position, also working snatch. That's one. Both things are helping my shoulders more than anything I've ever done. Muscle snatches and power snatches combined with pressing, less benching. Second thing, getting my back vertical and doing a hell of a lot of pause squats up to max 3 or 4 times a week.
Well, for you as a power lifter, you're used to being very bent over and being higher. in that very vertical position.
Exactly.
Very, very out of the ordinary for you. And so because it's so out of the ordinary for you, you made a lot of progress off of that quickly.
Yeah. It was a huge boost in everything. I started deadlifting more. Yeah. I started being more explosive on box jumps, all because I took the time to get good at something I was so foreign to. Mm-hmm. And now I got to where like, I'll do the safety bar 4 or 5 days a week. I'll go out and work up to 400 or 500 pounds just as quick as possible with no undue effort. Just load the bar, sit, squat. I'll even breathe a couple times at the bottom without letting myself bend over at all, and I'll just casually stand.
Yeah, you bring up that. Sorry.
Because if you keep your back vertical, that's the kind of thing you can do because there's no fatigue on your back. It's just teaching me how to be in a better position, because if you don't get in that position, you pay the price by rounding over and dying.
Yeah, you bring up that point of being a novice, and I think most people who go, oh, I'm a CrossFitter, I want to get stronger, they're a novice on the strength side of things, and 531 seems to be like the pretty much ideal entry level strength program for CrossFitters who want to get stronger.
Yeah, so
it's a very novice
also
approach.
A very effective thing to do if you are a guy who's run to a dead end in a strength sport like I did with powerlifting. What you don't need to do is consider yourself quote highly trained and then keep on trying to go forward from that point. The best thing you can do to get the most progress at your training is to come back around and repeat the early steps.
I think all of us standing here right now understand that.
That's a universal truth.
Really,
progress
well.
Works.
You can only push the advanced stuff so far, and then you'll get injured.
Progress works by going up and getting more and accumulating work and intensity and all that. And it also works just as well to go back and relearn what you've done with these experiences and do a fucking better job at it.
Yeah.
Those things are very awesome tactics.
Yeah, one of the best things about Jim that I've learned over the years is that he really focuses on making everything as simple as possible. There's nothing advanced or crazy or really out of the ordinary about the program. It's just a basic program where you're doing all the things that you need to do and nothing that you don't need to do.
Yeah. Focusing on the fundamentals.
There's one error people make. They'll read Jim's program. Because look, hey, Jim, dude, if somebody looks at it and goes, it's simple, and I don't think it's very sexy, I want you to keep in mind that look at Jim's history. He was, like most of us, geeking out on training, learning everything he can. He got into powerlifting. He got into strength and conditioning as a coach at the University of Kentucky, I think. He read Super Training. He read all those books. He knows about concurrent, conjugate, and all that periodization models. He knows all that stuff. And what has he come back to now that he's gotten all that experience, and he's learned all his lessons, and he can look back and say what he would do differently? He does the simplest possible thing.
Breaks it down.
It's not correlated with efficacy.
Breaks it down 100-page ebook. So yeah. this what's really great about this is you can go to jimwindler.com, and if you want the book right now, all you have to do is go to the website and download it. So it's not you're not gonna have to order it and wait a couple days for it to get to you. You can do it right away.
And it's good. It's not, you're not gonna waste your money with that book.
What's great about this program for CrossFitters, and this is why I really suggest it highly, is because the volume is relatively low. If you're playing a sport, football, rugby, any sport, I mean, you have practice and you already have training volume that week, this is a great way to add strength volume without it being crazy or really high. I know there's periods of time where, like, CrossFitters who are more advanced or have been doing a lot of strength training, they may not like that volume of training, but even Rich Froning was telling me he was doing 5-3-1 last year. So
It works.
And for
credit where credit's due.
For any program, you know, when people ask, you know, oh, I've been doing 5-3-1, what should I do next? And then my first question is are you still getting results from 5-3-1? Are you still getting stronger? Mm-hmm. If the answer is yes, then it's like the answer mean that just means you should keep doing 5-3-1. Now you say, hey, I plateaued, I haven't gotten stronger in the last, you know, 12 weeks. And it's like, okay, we need to change programs, or we need to look at change something.
Pick
here.
All the fruit within reach, and then
and it could
ladder.
Be a lifestyle thing. But
yeah, generally, programming is the last thing that you want to change.
Yeah,
you got to make sure you're actually doing the program you say you're doing first. That's one of the big ones.
True dad, homie.
You go, whoa, what have you done this week? And they're like, well, I mean, I've been really busy work. I didn't make it for training the last 2 days. And then you find out they're not even doing the program they say they're doing.
That's right. A good point. Because guess what? Probably one of Jim's major complaints would be, and probably one of the biggest mistakes people will make, especially CrossFitters, they'll take 5-3-1 and do it. And then they'll do like CrossFit Endurance or something, or do main site stuff. And they'll start bolting all this together and go, the result wasn't good. It didn't get stronger. 5-3-1 didn't work. You know, 5-3-1 is a program. If you wanted to get, you want to maximize your experience with that, you should do it. And then you should carefully balance the other things you might attach to it.
Yeah.
You
know? So the way the program works is it's got 4-week cycles. You know, it progressively gets more
progressive. It progressively gets progressive.
The volume goes up week to week. On the 4th week, you deload like you do a lot of programs. Unload. Sorry. So yeah,
Doug's there. I'm sorry.
I believe Jim called it deloading.
I'm standing up for unloading.
I'm just saying what he was saying.
So deloading. He suggests a deload every 4th week, which is very common amongst many programs. That's how I like to program personally. That's how we do it in 6-month muscle gain. That's how we do it in road to regionals. Mm-hmm. So you've got this 4-week program, and if you're doing CrossFit alongside. And I think doing CrossFit as your conditioning, doing that as your strength work, doing CrossFit for your conditioning is a great idea. But what you don't want to do is when you deload the strength, that's probably a great time to deload your conditioning as well. You know, half down, figure out how much conditioning you're doing and cut that as well during that week. That's not the time. I think that would probably be a common mistake with CrossFitters. It's like, oh, the strength's going down. Now I should really push the conditioning. No, this is when your whole body needs to begin recovering.
It's kind of like when people drink soda and they're trying to lose weight and they don't count that as calories. They don't think of that as being what's making them fat. Like when you're taking off training, you go, well, I'm not training heavy. I'm just doing some reps, so I'm resting. No, you're still doing more work.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you just think about a 1 week or 1 month cycle where you're just doing 4 weeks and you're not thinking about anything longer term than that, then you get to that 4th week, train really hard for 3 weeks on a new program, get to that 4th week and you're still motivated, you think, I don't really want to deload. Like, right. Okay, maybe I'll deload what he was telling me to deload, and then I'll go do some extra metcons and a bunch of extra stuff. Right. But you think about it long term, you think about doing 4 week cycles for over the course of an entire year. Well, then taking that 4th week and deloading like you're supposed to makes a whole lot more sense, because at the end of that year, you're going to need those back off weeks.
Yeah, that nothing makes me want to kick an athlete like a bad dog more than like when they go, hey,
coach, take it easy, coach.
When they go, oh yeah, I feel really good right now, so I did some extra heavy deadlifts this morning. I'm like, No, you're supposed to feel really good and fast right now. This is not the time to do that.
How do you feel now? Terrible.
Yeah, and like, I don't understand why I'm missing my snatches. It's like, I do.
Your back
I know
is
exactly
red.
Why.
All right, so the breakdown week by week. Basically, week one, and I think he has a couple different variations. I actually haven't read the program in a couple of years, but if I remember correctly, it's something along the lines of week one, you're for your heavy movement, if you're doing heavy squat, heavy deadlift, or heavy overhead press or bench press, you're going to be doing something along the lines of 3x5 for that one heavy movement. And then week two, it breaks down to like 3x3, so three sets of three heavy reps, a 3RM more or less. Mm-hmm. And then week four, this is where the name of the book comes from. You do 3x5-3. Week three, you do 3x5-3-1. So five sets or five reps on the first set, three reps, and then it builds up to a heavy single on that third set.
This is all percentage based as well. Like, it is. And he suggests that you stick to these percentages. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go, oh, I feel good today, and go heavier. So go ahead, Doug. Sorry.
Right. So we'll get to the percentages here in just a second. So you have those first 3 weeks where you're building up 3x5. 3x3, 3x5-3-1, and then it comes to the fourth week. You built up that heavy single as your last set on that third week, and then you have a deload week. And so you take that deload week, and then you can start fresh again the next week.
It's like,
if you,
what's the percentage? Like 40% on the unloading week?
It's pretty. I don't remember exactly.
It's intentionally very low. Like
it goes by 3x5, 3x3. Yeah, 5-3-1 deload. I'm trying to see what he suggests for the deload week specifically.
So you build up to that heavy single at the end of that third week, mm-hmm, on your 5-3-1, and then if you PR, then you deload, and then when you come back and you run your percentages, we're gonna get to percentages here in a second. You run your percentages again. You basically, even if you PR by 20 pounds, you still want to progress slowly. And this is what Jim recommends, is that even if you PR by 20 pounds, when you recalculate percentages the next week, if it's a smaller movement or movement with mostly upper body, like a heavy overhead press or a bench press, you might want to add only 5 pounds. Yeah, if it's a heavy deadlift or a heavy squat, then maybe you add 10 pounds. But right, if you PR by 30 pounds, you don't rerun your max numbers where you get your percentage off of that next week by adding 30 pounds and then running those percentages. You just add 10 pounds. That way you can progress more slowly. Again, that'll help with your long-term progress and you won't stall out quite as fast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when you start the program, he suggests find your max. Now take 10% off of that, and that's how you're going to run the program from there on forward.
That right there is the thing that, even when I did it a few times, I got some good results out of it while I was taking a break from traditional powerlifting stuff. The temptation is there to say, well, you know, man, that minus 10%, I could do more than that. Shit. And you just put your 1RM in, and you're already off to a bad start. You really do need to have a conservative estimate to start that you know you could probably lift more than that, and then you take 10 off. You got to be really conservative.
Yeah, you got to think about the long game here.
Yeah, it's a long game.
We've talked about this before. Short-term goals are usually at odds with long-term goals.
They're like a sugar rush. They feel really great, and then it's gone, and you're confused, and you're left crying.
Yeah, and this is actually something I suggest. We do a lot of we do a little bit different style strength training for the 6-month muscle gain, but the suggestion is throughout the entire program is, hey, we have 26 weeks. Like, it's a 26-week program. You have 26 weeks to get stronger.
And you will.
And what you do is you sometimes see guys trying to put 20, 30 pounds on their back squat in like a week.
You'll pay for that.
And sometimes they're successful, but it kind of, in spite of their long-term results, they've now screwed themselves.
We know you can do it. We know you're strong, man. We know you can do it. That's not the point.
Here's the thing is, if you add 5 pounds to your back squat for 26 weeks in a row.
It's a lot of additional
work. It's 130 pounds in 6 months. That is huge. That is, and if people would just be a little more patient, they would be safer. Their joints would feel a lot better, and then they would get progress for a lot longer, and their potential will be a lot higher. And
on the contrary, if you do the 30-pound jump, you end the year maybe keeping about 20 pounds as being a persistent outcome of your training, because you get really tired, you get bummed out, and you start hating training, and you take a week off, and you get back into it, and you don't get anything out of it at the end.
So here, I found those percentages for you. So again, I said week one was three sets of five reps. And so set one would be 65% by five, and then 75% by five, and then 85% by five, or basically as many as you can get. You're kind of AMRAPing that.
Five.
Probably you'll probably get more than five if you really took your one rep max, calculated 90% of it, and then took 65% of that.
It'll be light.
And 75% of that, and 85% of that. It'll be pretty light. So when you get to that 85% for that third set, you'll probably get more than five reps.
And you're supposed to, And if you're you get more than five reps, don't think that something's going wrong.
Yeah.
Something's going very right. And I think I want to get to this, you know, the different ways that muscles get stronger, a little bit of physiology here, and explain why the multiple reps can be really important and why it's probably important for this specific program to be conservative. We should probably just jump right into it. I was like, we should save it for later.
Sounds like now's the perfect time.
Everyone's like, here,
we will come to that. But
yeah.
So that was week one, right? Week one was 65% for five, 75% for five, 85% for five plus. And then week two, you're doing 3x3 and you're going 70%, 80%, 90% for three plus on that last set.
Up, the volume comes down a little bit.
Right. And then week three, you're doing 5-3-1. And so it goes 75% for five, 85% for three, and then 95% for one, or if you can get two or three or however many, get as many reps as you can again. And then week four is the deload week. And so you're doing three sets of five again, but this time you're doing it very light, control down, fast, explosive on the way up, but you're not gonna do too many reps. So you're gonna do 40% for five, 50% for five, and 60% for five.
Speed
and so
reps.
There'll be speed reps. They'll be easy. You shouldn't be overly tired at the end of it. You're working your technique. You're recovering.
And you only do the prescribed reps, right? Is that how it goes? Like, you don't rep on those sets. That's the trap.
You don't increase the volume.
We're not going for a pump there, homie.
Right.
You're not going for a pump. Just do the five reps and sit down.
Right. The first 3 weeks, when you get to the third set, you're going to do as many reps as possible. But the fourth week, nope, you stop at 60% for five reps, and then you rack it.
Lower load, lower reps equals rest.
Yes. All right, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk about why this program works so well. And we're back. Oh, now we're back. Oh, CTP, you know, new camera here. He didn't know when he was recording. He'll get the hang of this new contraption eventually.
It looks like the Starship Enterprise.
It does. It does.
Doesn't it?
I'm waiting for it to shoot a laser at me and just turn me into a pile of dust. All right. Before we left, we talked about how we would talk about why the program works so well. And Chris Moore and I last night got in a conversation about, you know, what makes muscle stronger, what stimulus is involved for that. And probably a lot of people don't understand that. They just kind of know that lifting heavy weights makes you stronger and maybe don't think about it any deeper than that. So we're going to explain a little bit of that. And I want to talk about, he suggests to not deviate the program too much. And I think that suggestion is because, or he says don't deviate it at all.
Because you may not know what the fuck you're doing.
Right. And the reason that people don't know what they're doing is because they don't understand why. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can understand why the program works, then you might have a little insight in how you can tweak it. But if you don't understand why something works, then you really can't tweak it. And that's why I kind of want to talk about like physiology basics of, you know, strength stimulus.
You wouldn't take a wrench to your motor without knowing what you were doing.
The best analogy there that I've ever heard from strength coaches is that this right here is a recipe. And any Joe can follow a recipe. You can give a recipe to any little kid and he can bake some chocolate chip cookies. But you don't want that little kid going and messing with the recipe because he's just going to screw it up. And those cookies are going to come out tasting like shit.
They're not going to be cookies at all.
We're going to ask John Benz about that. We used confectioner sugar instead of flour. He ended up with just...
And what? A cookie recipe?
Yeah, he was trying to make cookies and he thought he was using flour. He's using confectioner sugar.
John, never took home ec, homie. I took home ec. One.
I mean, he knows how to read packages.
Two, free pie and pizza during school.
All right. So until you have about 10 years of experience, you're not going to be to the point where you can write a program and really be a chef that makes a good program that's going to work. So just follow it straight up. Have the experience of what you get from the program as written. And then if you want to change it afterward, if you have the experience, I suppose you go ahead and try it. But you probably want to find someone who has more experience than you and ask them what they would tweak based on your needs and
talk to them
in your experience.
True that. Plus, if you do this program and then you do another program, and after you've done 5-10 programs, you kind of start figuring out what parts of each program are working the best.
That program hopping son of a bitch.
Well, you know, what I don't suggest is do this program for a month and then do another program for another month. Do this program for 6 months and then do something else. You know what I mean?
Unless you don't like being stronger. If you just want to, if you like fucking around and waste your time, then do that.
Yeah. All right. So we'll talk about why it works. There's the basic principle of muscles getting stronger is putting tension on them. So if you put tensile force on a muscle, that's a stimulus necessary for it to adapt to get stronger.
Like you're pulling a cable and putting tension on it, like the tautness of that strand.
So for me, I think of tension on a muscle in three different ways. One is time under tension. You've probably heard that before, maybe not. And
Well, I'm doing my curls.
We think about volume. So there's two different ways to get more time under tension on a muscle. And that is by doing more repetition, or you could do something like tempo work. You could go slow on the way down, slow on the way up, pauses, things like that. Put more, moderate loads usually with tension on that muscle.
More time.
The next way would be high force movements. So 90%. Or above, just heavy weights. We'll just say that. Mm-hmm. So putting on, sorry.
How old are Doug's
stuff? Like, oh, geez. So yeah, using heavy weights to put a lot of force on those muscles, a lot of tension. That's another way to cause a muscle to introduce that stimulus.
Squats and deadlifts and presses are good.
That's right, heavy. Mm-hmm. And then the next one would be speed work. And that is where you're actually attempting to move something as quickly as possible. So not only are you recruiting as many muscle fibers as possible, but because you're trying to move as quickly as possible, you're causing a lot of tension. It would be like if you're rock climbing and you've got a rope connected to you and you fall 20 feet, and that it's the speed of the fall that's causing all that, 15,000 pounds of
it's
pressure
Superman
on the rope.
Still kills you when he catches you.
That's right. That's exactly right. So
it's also why kettlebell swings make you so sore.
Yeah,
your high speed deceleration causes a lot of tissue breakdown. It makes you super sore. That's why plyos make your calves so sore if you haven't done anything in a while. If you've never jumped rope and then you go jump rope for the first time, you're going to have super sore calves.
So I can buy that. Yeah, I've never not jumped rope, so I wouldn't know. But
mind if I sum up everything you just said?
Go for it. So you're much better at the summing. I'm much more better at the rambling.
So basically, there's three main methods. You talk about repetition method.
Repetition or tempo, I kind of put them in the same category.
Right.
I personally do. Well, other coaches might you say you're
Doug
a
talk,
fucking
you
asshole.
Son of a bitch.
I know, he just got it took
you
over.
You son of a bitch.
Too much coffee.
Let Doug
too
talk.
Much coffee.
Let fucking Doug talk.
So we'll put this in powerlifting terms. I'm not sure who originally came up with all these terms. So you got repetition method, you got max effort method, and you got dynamic effort method. All the Louis stuff. I don't know if Louis actually created it or not, but he certainly talks about it quite a bit.
No,
but
of course not. But he put the words on it.
Soviets.
Right. So I don't know who named it all. But basically, repetition methods, you're kind of like your bodybuilding. It's basically moderate weight. So you're looking at 60 or 70% of your max, 3 to 5 sets of 8 to 15-ish reps. And that way you're getting enough volume, enough time and attention to cause some type of muscular growth. You got dynamic effort method. That basically is your speed training, like you said. So in the powerlifting world, especially the Louis Westside-ish mm-hmm. type things, you're looking at 8 to 12 sets of like singles or doubles.
Maybe triples on bench.
Maybe triples sometimes, but control down, explode up. You're doing it roughly, we'll say, every minute on the minute. You're getting, maybe 15 seconds of work, 45 seconds of rest. You shouldn't be tired. You should be fresh the whole time. That way you can accelerate the weight. And then while you're accelerating the weight, you're putting max tension on your muscle while moving that light load. And then you also have your max effort method, and that's what you're saying with the heaviest weights. You're looking at something like probably between 85 and 100% of your max. You're doing, depending on the program, probably between 3 and 5 sets of probably 1 to 3 reps, as heavy as you possibly can. So you're putting max tension. That's not about time under tension. That's about max tension on the muscle. You're contracting as hard as you can against the heaviest load possible.
You're playing corn. You're screaming lightweight. And all that kind of stuff. But I'll say, to that point, any program, there's nothing magic about programs, they're tools, but any program can work so long as it incorporates those elements and you get a bounce. Corn, yeah.
By the way,
so like Westside has
those
elements.
Thank you, Doug. You did a beautiful job of summarizing. I just want to say that. Yeah, thank you.
Westside has the elements. Jim's program, which you're going to explain, I guess, has those elements, and you're going to say where that fits, right? Or did you
right. Yeah, so actually, here to further that point, there's really two different ways that for the most part you break down your training days. You basically have either a dynamic effort dynamic effort lift, where you're doing some speed work on a main lift followed by all your repetition work. So you would do speed bench or speed squats for 8 sets of doubles, and then after that you're pretty much doing your volume training. You're doing glute ham raises and whatnot for 3 mm-hmm. to 5
that's your time
sets
under tension and volume
8
work,
to 10 8 to 12 reps or whatever. So you're doing dynamic followed by repetition on some days, and then usually your other days you're doing some type of super heavy lift, your max effort lift, followed by again repetition stuff. So
the way I say, like in the CrossFit world, that's usually when you would wide. You do kettlebell swings and pull ups and
could be
a potential solution.
Yeah,
to that.
But it's got to be done the right way. So. It gets tricky.
That goes without saying.
Right. So in CrossFit, most of your volume, most of your repetition method is included in the Metcon. So that's where CrossFit's a little bit different. You using CrossFit, you either do your max effort movement, it's like a heavy squat or a heavy deadlift or whatever, or you do something like a heavy snatch or heavy clean, and that's kind of like your dynamic effort method. It's your speed work. It's still heavy because it's a heavy snatch or heavy clean, but it's not so heavy that you're grinding because you have to be able to more or less throw the barbell around and get under it. Mm-hmm. And so it's either a heavy snatch or heavy clean, that's your dynamic effort method, and then you go Metcon and that's your repetition work, or your heavy squat or heavy deadlift, or maybe a heavy press, or maybe weighted pull-ups, and then again for your repetition method on that day you would go to your Metcon.
So this is a really important point, because I think a lot of people try to do some strength work and they're doing a strength phase, and so now they do heavy weights in their Metcon too, and this is a really good argument to not do that. And this is why I've seen the best results with athletes getting stronger by keeping the weights light or body weight light in the conditioning, and keeping, you know, sticking with the strength program. And then if you want that assistance work, don't be going over 60% on your barbell movements.
You get tired on being heavy, well, and you don't train the other elements.
You don't get the volume. Mm-hmm. You're going from, you know, the high tension stuff, the max effort or the high speed stuff, and then you go to a Metcon, and now you're not going to get the amount of repetition you need to get that third variable. Mm-hmm. So we talk about variety in CrossFit, and that's what makes it so good. But a good program is going to have variety. And even though you're seeing squat, press, and deadlift, you go, oh, there's not much variety in those movements. Well, the variety is found in the programming. Get good at that one movement using the variety of methods to get stronger.
Right. So we talk about Metcons, which is basically conditioning in the CrossFit world. But actually in 531, as far as conditioning, it's not like it's left out all the way.
He's a big fan of it.
Yeah, he does his assistance work, which is the higher rep repetition work for volume. That'll help you, again, get a little more time under tension, help you get some muscular growth, and help with your strength a little bit.
Big fan of pull-ups. I think maybe a little bit of curl for bicep health. Mm-hmm. Maybe some stiff leg deadlifts, sit-ups. So again, the assistance work is all very fundamental as well.
Right. So if you have a lower body dominant day, you might do your heavy squat or whatever, and then you'll do some type of maybe good mornings or glute ham raises, mm-hmm. or reverse hypers or whatever. On your upper body days, you might do some type of a heavy overhead press. And then for your assistance work, you might do your pull-ups, your bent rows, dumbbell incline, dumbbell bench, maybe weighted push-ups or whatever. But mm-hmm. then also there is some conditioning in the program as well. So it's not like you're doing no conditioning at all. He's a big fan of hill sprints, pushing the prowler, running stairs, things like that are super basic. You don't have to overthink conditioning, and he definitely doesn't overthink conditioning. He just runs as hard as he can up a flight of stairs and then kind of walks back down and does it again.
The next time he tries to do it one more time than he did last time. Or do it the same amount of work without dying as hard.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of hill sprints and running stairs.
If you can
tell them about our experience on the treadmill the other day.
Oh yeah,
I was not there. I am so glad I opted out.
That was rough, man.
I had something important to do, and that's why I wasn't there.
Yeah, if you're stuck in a hotel and it's, I don't know how cold it was outside. It was cold though. We didn't go outside, and we just wanted to get a quick workout in before we went out that evening to meet up with Travis Mash and Christmas Abbott. Say what?
You name dropping sons of bitches.
And so, he's like, don't forget Christmas.
And so we go down to this little tiny weight room, which, God, it wasn't much bigger than this room. And there's a treadmill in there and a few dumbbells and a bunch of mirrors, and that was about it. And so we warmed up real fast, and then we got on the treadmills, and we just put it at the highest incline. We warmed up real fast,
which means you probably didn't warm up real good.
Yeah, we did a decent warm up, but really only 5 or 10 minutes. And then
questionable.
We decided the first thing we were going to do is just run a quarter mile uphill sprint on this treadmill for conditioning.
Was it max?
Yeah, like 15 degree incline,
degrees,
and then we just put it,
that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, we just put it on a certain mile per hour, and then you know, start running and just kind of see what happens. And if it was too slow, we just beep it up, and if it was enough, we could beep it down.
Use the beeps to get it up and down.
Beep.
All right,
but. I put it on way too. I wasn't that warmed up, and I put it on way too high.
You felt weird for an hour after.
It wrecked me, dude. I was gonna do a couple of them. I did one of them, and I was wheezing, and I was thinking about throwing up, and I was like, I can't do anymore. Like, we're gonna go out and have a good time with these guys, and I'm gonna be sitting in the corner like holding my head.
Dude, I've only seen Doug maybe a handful of times get to the point where he's like, I don't want to move. If he's done that, he really did make himself. Like, he really did push it hard.
So I used to do it all the time though. Training for MMA, I would put it at the highest incline, and then I would do 1 minute sprints. And the great thing about treadmill incline sprints is that there's no opportunity to slow down unless you beep yourself down. So you can set it on 10 miles an hour, and then you just have to go 10 miles an hour.
You got no option, bro.
Unless you decide to hop off or decide to go slower. So you're
consciously making an effort to be a pussy at that point.
Right.
And hit down.
But the benefit really is that you can run a sprint, a 1 minute sprint at 10 miles an hour. And if you did it, next time you can run 10.1 miles an hour. And then 10.2 miles an hour. And each time you get it,
you can't do that on a hill.
Yeah, it's just like doing a back squat. Like if you get 5 reps at 300 pounds, well, you can go 305 pounds next time. And you can find that limit to a very precisely. It's not like running around a track where like you're like, okay, I'm going to do a 400 meter sprint. And then you're like, I think I'm running faster. And then you go, oh, I was trying to get a 62 and I got a 64. Bummer.
Now you're making me question not taking my grandfather's treadmill now.
It's cold, it's hot, it's dry, it's wet, it's early in the morning, it's late in the morning. Like, there's no way to control how you do on the track. It's fucking no way to do that.
It's a great way to force yourself to run a little bit faster for a certain period of time, and you can wreck yourself like that.
So, is there anything else we want to cover about 5-3-1? We're leaving anything out?
You made a good point on the break about considerations before you begin, did you? Where you should go now for more information.
Oh yeah, make sure.
It's an incredibly important point.
Yeah. So this was not intended to skip 5-3-1, the book. Like, this was not intended for us to cover it, so you can watch this episode or listen to this and know what to do now. We're just talking about the benefits of it, why it works, and maybe some good supplemental or complementary information to the book. We'll definitely try to get Jim Windler on the show in the future. If you want to buy the ebook, you can go to jimwindler.com, click on the store. You can buy the ebook and download it today for $20. Or you can go to Amazon.com and buy the paperback.
Elite, is it on Elite FTS?
And it's probably, I would be shocked if it was not on EliteFTS.com. And by the way, we're not making any money off of this.
No,
we just think it's great.
Yeah, so actually, we just get a lot of questions about 5-3-1, and we just want to be as possible.
You got a question document open still?
Well, what I was going to say was a question that we do get from a lot of CrossFitters is that they don't just want to do squats and deadlifts and presses. They want to work on their snatches and their cleans and their other CrossFit skills and their gymnastics. So how do they? I know we're not supposed to alter the program, but does anyone know what Jim does when someone wants to throw in some cleans or some snatches?
I think he covers that at the end of the book.
I think you can do 5-3-1 programming. You might not do your rep set at the end, but you can still do. You can certainly do 5 reps in a power clean or hand clean. It might work better if you do ones, doubles, and triples. But you can still do the same progression and start conservative and work your form. You will get better. It's probably not ideal for weightlifting programming, but if you're a guy who wants to be strong and also do the power clean or do some snatching, you could. That would be perfectly serviceable.
I would keep it separate. I actually don't remember what the book says on it specifically, but I would definitely keep it separate. And you could do it somewhat of a progression, but I would probably focus on technique and keeping the weights light, and then really just focus on being stronger. And then after you get to a certain point, and you say, "Hey, I want to improve my." If you really want to improve your weightlifting, and that's like your number one goal, this probably isn't the program for you. But if your biggest thing is strong,
it's probably okay.
Right. If you're just trying to get your squat and press up, then this is what you need to do. So you need to know what your goal is here. So the goal here is really get your squat, deadlift, press up.
Yeah.
If you want to get your weightlifting up, there's a ton of other weightlifting programs out there.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
So there's a million ways you could do it. I've actually done this exact same thing before. What I did was I was doing 3 days a week, and I would just do 3 sets of 3 of either power snatches or power cleans. By doing a power variation, a power snatch or a power clean, as opposed to a full squat snatch or squat clean, you're automatically going kind of light, but you're still getting the movement pattern down every day. You're still able to kind of remember what that feels like. That way, when you get out of this program and you want to get back onto some weightlifting or CrossFit specific program, it's not like you haven't cleaned or snatched in 12 weeks or however long you did the program.
Yeah, you've got to practice the movement. You got to treat weightlifting like a sport. You can get stronger and with powerlifting style movements without treating it like a powerlifting sport. Like with weightlifting, think about it as like throwing a baseball. You wouldn't play baseball and go weeks and weeks on end without throwing the ball or swinging a bat. The same thing with weightlifting. You don't have to take it to maximum loads, but you at least need to be doing the movements and practicing.
And those squats and those deadlifts should probably be like clean pull deadlifts and high bar squats.
You could do
if the goal is weightlifting and you want to get back into that and you're in off season, I would probably still be doing.
Oh, I thought you were saying sub clean deadlifts for deadlifts in the program. I would not do that because you can't get the same stimulus.
I'm saying if you're taking a break, you're going to get back into. Yeah, we got it. Yeah, man.
Yeah, dude.
You're in agreeance.
we're in agreeance or a concurrence of ideas.
Chris Moore and I agree a lot more than we used to. That's
we
for
do.
Sure.
We're two sides of the same coin, my friend. A weird coin.
We used to throw things at each other in the parking lot.
That's not true.
Yeah, I just want to make it really dramatic for the people at home.
Play along.
It's all peace and love, man, really. I never struck you. I never said an unkind word about. I called you C word or two.
I think you've called me names. I've definitely called you names.
You've made me sad, man. Before once or twice, made me real sad.
All right, let's get on with the show.
We're done. What
you say, Chris?
It's an episode 100 on the way.
Oh, that's right. This is episode 99. Episode 100 is coming out next week.
Maybe we'll do something special.
Maybe. Top secret.
Yeah.
It's in the works right now.
Something special coming.
You want to say bye?
Yeah. Yeah. So, as we already did, promoted Jim Windler. You can go to his website, buy the book, go to Amazon, buy that book.
You definitely should. It's like $20.
Yeah.
Well worth it.
I bought the ebook a long time ago. I actually had to pull my old PC out, which I haven't opened in like a year. I go, I got the book somewhere. Anyways.
Also, go to the Teen Nation article forever. That Jim Windler wrote. See Chris in the background, looking good.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Also, shy of 400 pound Chris
you
Moore.
More, get that book and read it. And also, Doug, wasn't there a top questions that Jim published on Teen Nation of 531? Or was that on Elite Fitness?
I think that was on EliteFTS.com.
So
Elite
Jim
Fitness.
Has put out, look, dude, Jim has put out a lot of free information on this. And you can go out, just learn to your heart's content. Just get in your Googles and type it in and go for it.
Cool.
Teen Nation actually has a lot of good 531 stuff. So
yeah,
go
just
read.
Google 531.
It's all free. Go read it.
Read those 10 articles. You'll have it down.
And if you like 531, if you like the discussion today, you probably want to check out what Chris put together, which is Starting Strength. No, it's not.
No, it's not. Strength. That was someone
God
else's.
Simple strength. Why can't I get it right?
Well, I go into like where that's like a, here's what you should do. Here are the percentages. Here's how it works. I go into sort of, if you want to know how periodization works, but you're a beginner, you want to see how these things will mix and how you put together a program and mix and match ideas. That's what that product really is.
Yeah. So I could
it
see
makes
like,
it makes sense.
If you like one, you'd like the other. They could complement
together.
Each
they
other.
Go together really
yeah.
well. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Make sure you go to Barbell Shrug. I can't talk. Make sure you go to barbellshrug.com. Sign up for the newsletter.
Send a tweet to Jim Windler.
Yeah.
Tell him you like his program.
Tweet Jim. Tweet us. Put it on the same thing. Be like, man, you guys should do a show together.
And then retweet it. And then tweet it some more.
Yeah.
Give us a 5-star review on iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Make sure to go over to iTunes. If you like this podcast, which if you've made it to this point in this episode.
You love it.
You love it. Yeah.
By the way, thank you to all the people that have given us a 5-star review on iTunes. Because we have like 700 5-star reviews.
That's
and
super cool.
That is fucking awesome.
Well, we've
it
been
really
hanging
is.
Around like, we've been hanging around top three on what in...
Health and fitness.
Health and fitness.
Yeah, it's been Jillian and Dave Asprey and us.
Yeah, so
much
we've
in the
been
top
out
three
there.
Lately.
So like, I think it'd be really cool if we could hang out in number one spot more. And the way we would do that is good positive comments, 5-star reviews,
subscribe,
downloads. Yeah, subscribe to the whatever.
Chit chat.
Yeah.
Telling your friends about it. Telling your mom she'd really dig it.
Yeah, tell your mom.
Everyone get your mom to watch the show.
We're done.
Let's just
see
keep
you next
talking,
week, guys.